With the launch of a new podcast, there's another way to listen to The Sun, called The Wait. It joins reporter Yvonne Wenger on her long and unconventional journey to motherhood.
You know, you come back to it when you're sitting in the doctor's office and they show you an x-ray that shows that you would have to go through major kind of scientific advanced procedures to carry a child, when what feels more natural is becoming a mother to the child who needs one.
A challenging diagnosis after years of unsuccessful pregnancy attempts led Yvonne to look into adoption and foster parenting. What she found and didn't find, and the unexpected place she ended up, motivated her to do something rare in journalism: become part of the story.
This is a story about the children in our city who need adults to step up for them, put their hearts on the line for them, fight for them, love them, nurture them. It's a story about the ones who go back home and the ones who stay.
The Wait is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Yvonne's story is also being told through words, pictures, and video on our website. Go to baltimoresun.com/thewait.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. From housing and education to healthcare and employment, they will help you fight to make the biggest difference in your community. Join the fight at uwcm.org/fight.
Well, hello again and welcome back to Roughly Speaking. I'm Dan Rodericks of the Baltimore Sun, and this is episode 449. Today, a look back at some of the good news of 2018 and a couple of interesting stories we covered. The Sun is rolling out its multimedia review of 2018, and you can find all of our stories about politics and crime, business and the arts, sports and dining, the winners and losers of 2018 at baltimoresun.com. There's a lot of content. There are many ways to take the measure of the year, and the usual sport is to list the big news events: fires, floods, crime waves, scandals, or the accomplishments of entertainers and athletes, the deeds and misdeeds of politicians, the various things newsmakers do to make news. So all of that's there, some of what you might expect, a lot of what you might have forgotten, because these days the news seems to be like the storms that we see with climate change, ever more and ever more extreme. My guest for this episode is a colleague from the Sun Newsroom, Christina Tasek. She tackled so many different stories this year, working the 2:30 to 11:30 p.m. shift as a general assignment reporter. For the Sun's year in review, Christina was assigned to write a summary of the good news of 2018. Sometimes it's hard to think about all the good things because the news that we produce is so overwhelmingly sad and tragic sometimes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think I wrote, you know, is it just us or does the news feel like, you know, you're on your way to the apocalypse every day? And national news, I mean, local, yeah. You know, this year we've had the Gun Trace Task Force scandal, you know, so many other scandals.
We had some mass shootings. We've had the ongoing problem with homicides in the city, turnover in the police department.
So there's been a lot of sad news to go around. So it's always nice to get the good news assignment.
And this is one of the best news stories of the year, and that is the Chesapeake Bay. You know, ever since I got to Maryland, which is now 40-some years ago, we've been trying to, you know, make the bay healthier by doing different things. And it's been frustrating, up and down, crab population down, oysters coming back, oysters disappearing. Bay grasses coming, bay grasses going away. But this year there was mostly good news, according to the scientists.
Right. And Scott Dance was doing the reporting on this, that the researchers said that the health of the Chesapeake Bay had actually improved in March. And they did this by looking at a surge in underwater grasses, which contribute to the amount of oxygen in the bay. And that was, you know, the result of the so-called pollution diet that was meant to eliminate a lot of the toxins in the bay.
So there's some progress there. Tell me about what other good news did you find? What are we going to find in your list?
Well, there were little stories. There was the student who managed to get into all 8, I think, Ivy League schools that he applied to. That was Talia Richmond's story. I had to email, you know, because you forget all these things. So I emailed the entire newsroom and said, okay, what are the happy stories? And some reporters wrote me and said, I didn't have anything happy.
This is great. Christina is a lot younger than me, and she has trouble keeping all this straight, too. I'm glad to hear somebody else, someone less than half my age.
I know. Yeah, it's like I could remember things that happened maybe 2 weeks ago, but, you know, everything moves so fast. So there were some little stories, you know, of individual good things happening. You know, there was a wounded veteran who had a full penis transplant at Johns Hopkins. He had lost it during a bomb blast in Afghanistan. And Johns Hopkins managed to do a full new transplant from a cadaver. So that was good news for him.
Amazing. I remember a few years ago, arm transplants. It wasn't Hopkins. I think it was Union Memorial Hospital did it on this veteran, an Iraq veteran who lost both arms. They gave him human arms.
Wow.
It's a wow. Those are wow stories.
It's amazing what they can do. And there were other individual stories. Baltimore-based artist Amy Sherald had a great year.
A big year.
Right. Because she painted the official portrait of Michelle Obama, which I think everybody's heard about at this point, which was beautiful, and went viral after there was a photograph of a little girl who was just staring at this painting. And that, of course, made the rounds of the internet. And the little girl, I think, ended up getting to meet Michelle Obama.
Yeah, that was all very cool. And in sports, a big story in March, during March Madness in basketball, University of Maryland, Baltimore County. Upsetting the University of Virginia.
Because of this persistent performance. Top of the corner, 3 more by Lamar.
Cook, Paul, oh, they are really.
And Lamar with the rebound, stolen right out of his hands by Guy.
He's showing something.
Every game that we saw was close. This has been just total destruction.
Look at this. Exclamation.
Superlatives, you can't come up with enough. Absolute. Incredible performance.
Shock and awe in college basketball. UMBC makes
history. You know, I'm a Wahoo. So that's technically divided. You know, I don't know if that's such good news for me. No, I'm just kidding. I was very happy. I was very happy to hear that. How could you not root for the underdog in that situation?
I mean, a big underdog. This is like the first time in history, right? That a 16th seed beat the number one seed.
Right. The first time. And it was just, I think it was very validating for UMBC students. I covered some of the watch parties afterwards. Then they ended up not winning or losing their next game. But I think even just that win, you know, was really affirming to kids because they felt that this is a school that is known as kind of the nerdy school. They are really excellent in science. They have a great track record for bringing diverse populations. I think they have the highest rate of African Americans with PhDs in the country. I might be screwing that up, but
I bet you're not far off, though. Freeman Hrabowski, the president of that university, has been working on that for a long time now.
Right. And to be excellent in sports as well, I think people were just kind of dazzled by that.
And they didn't just squeak out a victory over Virginia. They clobbered Virginia, which made it even more amazing. And people got retriever fever for several days there. Wasn't that fun?
Right. Everyone's, you know, buying T-shirts and, you know, petting their trademark bronze retriever dog that they have on campus. Yeah. So, it was a very nice moment.
Hey, I was curious. You did so many different stories this year. You were on general assignment. You were like a Jacqueline of all trades this year. Don't you feel that way?
Oh my God, you did all kinds
of different stories.
It's so random sometimes, you know. It's like I go from covering one, it's like a business story. I mean, that's the nature. I'm the second shift reporter. So I work, my hours are 2:30 to 11:30. And so I cover basically anything that comes in at that time, which can be anything from business to crime to something more colorful and happy, you know. It's just totally, totally all over the place.
Well, I wanted to ask you to pull out the stories that were fun for you to report on. I had one I wanted to share with you. One for me was meeting Downing Kaye, who turned 111 this year. 111.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh my God, I love.
I mean,
that.
I did a podcast with her. I had written a column about her a couple of years ago when the Chicago Cubs won the World Series, because we figured out that at 108 years old, she must have been the only person alive in Baltimore the last time the Cubs won a World Series. So I met her at that point. And then she's still going. She's 109, 110, and she turned 111 this year. And she's great. She plays Scrabble still, and I had a fun interview. Here's Donnie Kaye.
That was all very interesting.
Did you have a favorite president?
Well, we were Democrats, and we usually voted Democrat. We were that way. I did not vote for our present.
Our present president.
Yeah.
Yeah. You did not vote for him.
I did not vote for him. Do you know anyone who did?
No one who will admit it.
Oh, someone admitted it, right.
Some people brag about it, but some people won't admit it, that they voted for Trump. I know.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Let me mention. So that was fun for me to interview someone 111 years old.
I appreciated the secret to her longevity, which was, I think it was lemon and gin. Is that it?
No, when I said gin, she goes, "Oh no, honey." She said, "It was the juice of half a lemon every day until I was 100." And then I said, "Why did you stop at 100?" And she
said, "I'd lived long enough."
Lived long
enough.
Okay, Christina, give us one of your favorite stories from the past year.
Well, this is kind of a grim story, but I have maybe a grim sensibility.
It's grim in the sense that it involves the dead, but it's an interesting story.
Yeah, this was one of my favorite stories to cover, which was the rediscovery of an African-American graveyard that was buried beneath a Baltimore shopping center in the Bel Air Edison area. There's a professor named Ron Costanzo who began an excavation. This was a cemetery that was buried over in the 50s, and it had at one point, I think it was called Laurel Cemetery, and it first opened in 1852, and it became really the preeminent cemetery for African Americans in the city. If you were anybody, you were buried there. And so it was very fancy, but then it fell quickly. It fell into decline, I think, in like the 1920s, 1930s. People just began using it as a dumping ground. There were some shady maneuverings by government officials at the time to have the cemetery sold off and paved over and turned into the Bel Air Edison Crossing. And they said at the time that they had exhumed the bodies, all the bodies that were in there, and transferred them to a location, I want to say Howard County. But of course, when they do that, they never get everything. And so this professor wanted to see, okay, are there still bodies underneath there? And sure enough, he found, oh my God, tons. And you can actually, when I went out there, I don't know if this is still the case, but there was a little bit of headstone sticking out from one corner of the parking lot. And we were just standing there. I went out there with Lloyd Fox to take photos. He was taking the photos. And we were seeing the handles of caskets and stuff and just finding them in the dirt there. So it was very, I mean, fascinating and gruesome at the same time.
How did the professor access this area? Just by digging in a spot that didn't have a building on top of it, I assume.
Right. So there was like a little spot where the land was kind of, it was like in the corner of the parking lot where the land was kind of eroding. And he also did different surveys using like radar.
This is amusing to me. January marks 40 years that I've been writing a column. 40 years. And I have people who come up to me and say hello and tell me that I wrote a column about their brother or their sister or them years ago. And I can't remember them all. There's so many of them. But I do remember a cemetery story I want to tell you. So when I was a young reporter, the first newspaper I worked on was the Patriot Ledger in Quincy, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. And the Ledger uncovered a scandal where there was a historic cemetery. Some of these folks were buried in the colonial period. The cemetery superintendent decided to just dig up these old graves, toss whatever remained in the landfill, and resell the plots. Because this cemetery had been used for, you know, a couple of hundred years, and there was no room anymore for anybody else. But this guy was reselling plots by digging up. So in the 1970s, people got a lot of interest in their roots, partly because of the book Roots, and lots of people were tracing their ancestry then and wanted to visit graveyards. So people were showing up at this historic graveyard looking for their colonial ancestors, and they were gone. And the newspaper I worked for, the Patriot Ledger, did a big investigation of it. I think they even hired a backhoe to go into the frozen landfill in the middle of winter to uncover these caskets and bones that this guy had interred there. Yeah, there's a slightly different story. This is a story of corruption. Then one other cemetery story. West Baltimore, sometime in the 1980s, I wrote a column about an Irish cemetery.
Oh,
St. Peter's.
Yeah.
You know about St. Peter's?
I know about it vaguely because I was interested in writing a story about it. But tell me your story.
Well, it was totally overgrown with weeds and trees. And there were all these monuments and stones in there from people who had been born in Ireland and were immigrants to the United States. And I wrote a column about how it had been left to decay like that or just to be overgrown. And all these Irish Catholics turned out one day with weed whackers and bush axes and went in and cleaned it up. They felt so guilty about it because I had guilted them all into it. That's my story.
That's so interesting. And yeah, and now it's run by the...
Yeah, later on, Philip Berrigan, Liz McAllister, and Jonah House sort of took over supervision of maintaining the St. Peter's Cemetery. It was a big Irish-American Catholic parish out there at one time. All right, so the other story you have for us that you enjoyed writing.
I enjoyed it. So Eli Poussin, you know, you might follow him on Twitter. He's just one of these all-around fascinating, cool guys. And in April, he made it his challenge to do 30 days of picking up litter. And I think he actually does this year-round, but it was for him every day walking his two daughters to school, he would just pick up trash and he would post about it on social media and encourage other people to do the same. And it was just a fun, it was a fun story to write, I think, because he is so passionate about picking up trash. And I look at trash even in my own lawn. I mean, maybe this is disclosing too much, but you know, sometimes it's like someone throws a gum wrapper or something. I kind of shake my fist and say, oh, how could someone do that? But I don't pick it up. Right. And so the fact that here's this guy who's just picking up trash and he does it with such a joyful attitude that's really contagious. You know, afterward, you kind of think, yeah, we should all just pick up trash and the world would be a better place. So that was a really fun story to report, even though it required me to wake up way earlier than I normally do.
Oh, he gets up early, out there early in the morning?
Yeah, I think the girls go to school at like 7 or 8. It's to me, coming from night shift, it seems like an ungodly hour.
It's Eli Poussin. Poussin. I do see him on Twitter.
Right.
Yeah. There's a group in the York Road corridor in North Baltimore. I think every other weekend they're out there picking up trash. I've said all along, I wish that the city, the TV stations, the radio stations would resume telling people about litter. There needs to be almost a constant message to people that littering is bad. Now, you think we all, don't we all know this? But obviously we don't all know this. And I'm dating myself, but when I was a kid, public service announcements were on TV and radio all the time about litter.
I'm totally with you. And I guess I'm also dating myself because, I remember getting, you know, don't be a litter bug messages growing up.
Yeah.
And all the time, I feel like I see people just throwing garbage out the window.
Yeah.
And it's like, who do you think is going to pick that up?
I don't know.
So I'm with you. I think we need to have a cleanup campaign.
The other story, speaking of up, as in clean up, I have an up story for you. So the new tallest residential building in Baltimore, it's kind of hard to miss. It's 414 Light Street.
Right.
And while that was being constructed, there was a crane on top of the building because you need to have a construction crane that hovers above everything that hoists material up for who's ever doing the work to use. The crane needs to do all the hoisting. So I was walking down through downtown a lot, watching and admiring this crane operator way the hell up there. And I said, I want to find out who that guy is. So we went up there.
Oh my God.
I went up in last March, and I met Dustin Baker, 27 years old. And he was at that point 544 feet up. The thing about it, Christina, was when he's hoisting, say, a pile of sheetrock or something, a pallet of sheetrock, it sways a little bit. And
literally, that literally makes me want to throw up, just thinking about it.
And he's looking down through his feet, through the glass. He's looking down, and he's watching it, and he's calculating, you know, his speed, how fast he hoists this thing, how slow he does, depending on the wind. And you can feel the crane, the cab of the crane sway just a little bit.
That terrifies me. Yeah. What was it like?
Terrifying. But I didn't go up as high as he ultimately did in order to be up there, because that skyscraper is 44 stories. 414 Light Street is 44 stories. So he was above that. Unbelievable, isn't it? Yeah.
I'm one of those people that has panic attacks going across the Bay Bridge, so I would not. That would be, yeah, would be an assignment that I would have to give to somebody else.
Well, I didn't go all the way. We had Jerry Jackson, our photo editor, who likes to play with drones.
Right.
So he sent the drone up there to get the rest of the...
yes, yeah, a job for the drone.
Yeah. Christina Tasek has the good news of 2018, one of several contributors to the Baltimore Sun's Year in Review package, multimedia package that'll be online, I think, starting today. So look for that at BaltimoreSun.com. And there's a lot of material there, a lot of content. A lot happened this past year.
Oh yeah, it was another one of those.
She's exhausted.
Yeah, I'm exhausted. I'm gonna need a couple days to just process.
Thank you very much, and Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Thanks so much for having me on, Dan. It was great to talk to you. Happy New Year to you.
Christina Tasek is a general assignment reporter for The Sun. Look for her summary of the good news of 2018 in our multimedia year in review special, rolling out now at BaltimoreSun.com. Also, our condolences today go to the family of Gilbert Sandler, the great Baltimore storyteller who died Wednesday at 95. Listeners of Roughly Speaking probably caught Gilbert on this show last year, reminiscing about growing up in Baltimore in the 20th century and talking about the challenges facing the city in the 21st century. I recorded 3 episodes with him, and if you'd like to hear them, look for episodes 307, 293, and 294. We tweeted links to them today, and you can find all 3 episodes on my Facebook page or, of course, on your podcast app. Rest in peace, Gil Sandler, a wonderful man and raconteur who had many fans, including me. I'm Dan Rodericks at the Baltimore Sun. For producers Steve Early and Hallie Miller, thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by United Way. Whether it's helping a single mom in Dundalk keep her home or giving a bright student in Sandtown a chance to be his best, United Way fights for families. Help them win the fight. Visit uwcm.org/fight.